Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
From pop culture to politics, this is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, a great nation that appears to be on the verge of winding down its longest war, not the bloodiest war, not even close, but it has been, will have been 20 years by the time that American troops are removed from Afghanistan, according to the most recent plan announced by President Joe Biden. So what does that mean for the future of Afghanistan? What does it mean for the future of the U.S. military that the president in his budget plans is basically leaving defense spending flat? Is that a safe measure at a time when we're facing risks of even a coordinated assault by Russia on Ukraine and by China on Taiwan? To get perspective on all of this, one of the shapers and movers and shakers on military policy in Washington, D.C., the chair of the House Armed Services Committee, the Honorable Adam Smith, who is now in his 13th term. I'm proud to say he is a friend of this show. Congressman Smith, thanks for making time with us. You support the president in bringing home the remaining 3,000 troops from Afghanistan. Is that right?
Yes, I do.
And what happens next, do you think, to the struggling Afghan Republic?
Well, I think that they are definitely going to be in a very difficult situation, but they're in a very difficult situation right now and have been for some time. I mean, I've been to Afghanistan, gosh, I think 7-8 different times. It's a deeply divided country. There are all kinds. You've got the Taliban. You've got various terrorist organizations. You've got tribal groups. And, you know, for 20 years, we have been trying to help them come together and form some sort of coalition government. And it's just our troop presence has not made that happen. So I would anticipate that as we pull out, you know, that conflict will continue as it has for 20 years. We'll continue to work with the Afghan government. We're currently, you know, in negotiations with the Taliban trying to bring the two together. We'll continue to do that. But I think the odds are you're going to continue to see, you know, a violent conflict in Afghanistan for some time to come. And the Taliban are not going away anytime soon. But the issue is that our responsibility? Does that meet the requirements of U.S. national security to be there? And I don't think it does. I think the risk and the cost of keeping our troops there and placing their lives at risk and spending that money is greater than the risk and the cost of pulling out.
What about the possibility that a new Taliban-dominated government allows al-Qaeda or other terrorist cells to reconstitute themselves on Afghan soil? Since we've been using Afghanistan as a base of operations and we no longer would be able to do so, what would we count on using Pakistani facilities to go after the terrorists then? Where would they come from?
Well, that I think is the second piece of this. So, you know, first is talking about, you know, stability of the Afghan government, but then there's the true national security interest that the U.S. has, and it's what you described, the risk of a terrorist group reconstituting itself and threatening us. And that risk is there. I just think that risk is not as high as some people are saying it is. And again, the cost and the risk of keeping our troops there and losing more American lives, I think is too great. Now, how do we balance that risk? Well, I think a few things are different this time. You know, ISIS is actually present in Afghanistan. The Taliban and ISIS are fighting each other. The Taliban are now very much aware of the threat to them, even if they were to come back into control of government. The terrorist groups that are there now are going to threaten them much more than they threaten us because they're going to be right in their backyard. And I think that clearly makes it less likely that the Taliban are going to, you know, roll out the red carpet and allow a terrorist group to have safe haven in Afghanistan the way they did for Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda. So I think the risk is down substantially. But then, yes, at that risk, as we're managing that risk there, I mean, we're managing a risk like this in the Middle East, in Yemen, in Somalia, in Libya, in a good chunk of West Africa. And part of the way you monitor that is through our intel operations, and we can absolutely strike at terrorist targets within Afghanistan from standoff weapons. Now, it's not as easy. It's not as convenient as being there, but it's a lot less risky. And like I said, I think the risk of a terrorist group that threatens the U.S. being able to reconstitute itself in Afghanistan, given the interests of Afghanistan and Pakistan at this point, is far lower than it used to be. And the cost of taking that risk, you know, even lower, of maintaining a massive U.S. and NATO troop presence, like I said, I think that cost is too high when you look at the risk, well, the cost-benefit analysis of removing our troops as we are now planning to do. And let me just say, you know, President Trump, you know, had the same policy approach that President Biden did, and I supported President Trump on that when he was doing it.
I remember it was one of the very few policies where you did support President Trump.
Fair enough.
Let me ask you this, I am sure you have thought about it, everybody else has. We are not only withdrawing, the much higher number of allied troops are withdrawing. I mean, most people don't realize that there are more than double the number of other NATO troops. Were there any of our NATO allies that dissented about leaving Afghanistan?
Yes. I've spoken with a number of ambassadors and defense ministers from NATO allies over the course of the last month or so, and they, I guess descending might be too strong a word, they were more inclined to stick it out. And it was this conditions-based argument, and we've heard this for a long time. Well, yes, we should pull out of Afghanistan, but only when the conditions warrant it. But the conditions that people were talking about was the conditions where there was a stable Afghan government. I think what's become really apparent in the last 20 years is that's just not happening. If that's the condition, then we're staying forever. So, yes, a number of our European allies were more worried about it. But in the end, we actually just had testimony today from the European Commander, General Walters, who said that at the NATO meeting, as you know, the Secretary of Defense, Secretary of State were in Brussels over the course of the last few days having this conversation. And in the end, the consensus agreement was, yes, we work together, you know, we'll work together on pulling out the same way we worked together in the previous thing. So there is consensus now in NATO that this is the correct course of action. But it would be wrong to say that there weren't some who were worried about it, who probably would have preferred to stay for at least a little bit longer.
What about the risk of a bloodbath? It is not inconceivable, is it, that a new government dominated by the Taliban could end up executing or imprisoning or torturing or harming some of the hundreds of thousands of people in Afghanistan who have aligned themselves with the United States and have helped us in our struggle there. What happens if that transpires?
Yeah, no, look, there is that risk. There's no question about that. But there's that risk in a whole lot of places. It's been going on in Syria for a long time. It's going on in Myanmar right now. You know, and would I like a world where human rights were respected and that sort of thing didn't happen anywhere? Absolutely. But is it the U.S. military's responsibility to, after 20 years, stay there in the hopes that that won't happen? Because it's not like it's peaceful right now. And there's another downside to this that doesn't get talked about that much, but the presence of 10,000 Western troops in Afghanistan, in a Muslim country, in a country that is very hostile to outsiders, that too raises the risk of violence. I mean, how many Afghans have died in the last 20 years during this conflict right now, even with us being there? So, yes, there's a risk. You know, I'm all in favor of expanding, you know, asylum and visa programs to allow as many Afghans as possible to immigrate to the U.S., the ones who have worked with us. There's things we can do to mitigate that. But sadly, the U.S. military cannot eliminate that risk, and I don't want the U.S. military to be the policeman for the world.
I so much respect your clear and very direct answers, Congressman Adam Smith. the chair of the House Armed Services Committee. So what about the impact of this and the impact of the Biden defense budget? We will cover that and Andrew Yang under bitter attack coming up on the MedVet Show. To put it simply, materialism is the attempt to prove that human beings are merely meat in motion, that we have no free will, that we have no souls, that morality and religion are simply evolutionary artifacts programmed by nature for survival, and that our very thoughts and ideas can be fully explained by our brain chemistry. Darwin's theory of evolution made scientific atheism credible by offering a scientific explanation on how human beings could be generated through a blind process of random variation and natural selection. At discovery.org/MedVet, you can get a free mini book. Free! Darwin's Three Big Ideas that Impacted Humanity. It explores how three key concepts from Darwin undermine morality, religion, medicine, the criminal justice system, and the value of human life. Get your free book at discovery.org/MedVet. That's discovery.org/MedVet. Small investors shamed Wall Street by running the price of certain stocks way up to the detriment of big hedge funds, social media, and trading platforms, then kept investors from buying stock. A financial war is being waged in America. With all this volatility, now's an even better time to protect your net worth and own precious metals as part of your portfolio. Nick Rovich, who's the owner of Amfed Coin and Bullion, has always been fair and honest with my precious metals holdings, and now, more than ever, it's a good time to own tangible assets like gold, silver, and platinum. Amfed can show you smart choices, which have been proven winners time and time again. Call Nick and his team at Amfed today, 800-221-7694. That's 800-221-7694, or visit AmericanFederal.com.
According to the Wall Street Journal, the new book, The Great Devaluation, is the number one business book in the world. Hi, my name's Adam Baratta, two-time national best-selling author and owner of Advantage Gold, hands down the highest-rated gold firm in the country. We help investors put physical metals inside their IRAs. My first book, Gold is a Better Way, sparked a movement. My new book, The Great Devaluation, is the number one book in the country. I believe every investor should own physical metals. It's why I'm giving away my best-selling book to anyone with an IRA with over $100,000 for free. Call 800-900-8000 to get the bestseller, The Great Devaluation, sent directly to your door. That's 800-900-8000. The new decision is now obvious. Don't you deserve to do it with the best? Call 800-900-8000 for your free book today. That's 800-900-8000.
If you are trying to quit drinking or doing too many drugs, listen to me. You don't know me and we'll never meet. I had a problem like you once. I drank and used to party a little too much till it got out of control and almost ruined my life. I realized I needed help to fix my problem before it totally destroyed me. If you've tried to fix your drinking and drug problem and you know you can't do it alone, you need to call the National Treatment Advisors. They'll immerse you into a 30-day program to replace your old habits with new habits and totally change your life. And if you have PPO private health insurance, the entire program may be covered. Fix your problem right now before it gets any worse. Get clean. Call now and learn more. 800-296-1252. 800-296-1252. 800-296-1252. 800-296-1252.
One of my questions that I couldn't avoid And something that I don't think Adam Smith would have had any direct knowledge of, but it was what President George W. Bush thinks about this decision to remove all of the 3,000 American troops and then the more than 7,500 partner nation troops, mostly NATO troops, that remain in Afghanistan. And part of the answer to that is that prior to his announcement yesterday that we would be withdrawing everything by September 11th, and President Biden made a point of making that announcement on the precise spot where George Bush had initially announced the beginning of the conflict in Afghanistan, sending American troops there, that being October 7th, 2001. By the way, it was not the beginning of the conflict of Afghanistan. The conflict in Afghanistan has been endless. You may remember the Russians were there occupying Afghanistan and fighting Mujahideen, and we gave support to some of the Mujahideen under the Reagan administration. This has been around for a long time, and Afghanistan is one of the most deeply suffering and dysfunctional nations in the world. But I was wondering how Biden was handling this, and he actually seemed to go out of his way to be respectful toward his predecessors, particularly to President Bush and President Obama, both of whom continued the war in Afghanistan and made very significant decisions about it. President Biden visited Arlington National Cemetery. He visited the graves of brave Americans who had given their lives to this struggle. And he acknowledged repeatedly in making his announcement that we had achieved most of our goals, meaning that one of the things that President Bush announced when we initially went to war in Afghanistan was he announced that we were going there basically to strike back at the people who had struck at us on September 11th. And those terrorist bases have been liquidated and obliterated. And yes, there have been a series of Afghan elections that have been reasonably functional. We've helped to set up an Afghan army to defend the current government. Problem is that army is not entirely reliable or effective and probably won't be for a long time. The story, President Joe Biden spoke with two of his predecessors ahead of his Wednesday announcement that he will withdraw U.S. troops from Afghanistan by September 11th. The separate phone conversations between the president and former presidents Barack Obama and George W. Bush, as Biden prepared to make the announcement, underscore the longevity of the conflict, which has spanned four presidential administrations and nearly 20 years. He values their opinions and wanted them both to hear directly from him about his decision to withdraw troops from Afghanistan. That's what White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said of Bush's calls with Obama, of Biden's calls with Obama and Bush. Now, the question is, why didn't he talk to Trump? Because he's on the same page as Trump on this one. He is completing, fulfilling a policy decision that Trump had announced. Here is President Biden yesterday delivering the announcement that in his judgment, and as commander-in-chief, he gets to make that judgment, it's time for our troops to come home. Listen.
I'm now the fourth United States president to preside over American troop presence in Afghanistan, two Republicans, two Democrats. I will not pass this responsibility on to a fifth. After consulting closely with our allies and partners, with our military leaders and intelligence personnel, with our diplomats and our development experts, with the Congress and the Vice President, as well as with Mr. Ghani and many others around the world, I've concluded that it's time to end America's longest war. It's time for American troops to come home.
That was the president of the United States. Would this be a popular decision? It depends on how it works out. I'm reminded of something, and this is a caution to the Republican Party. One of the things that soured me forever on the Democratic Party was the experience of 1975. Now, what am I talking about, 1975? Yes, I was a kid. But one of the things that people argued about in the last stages of the Vietnam War was the notion that if America withdrew our troops, that there would ultimately be a hideous bloodbath in Southeast Asia. And people on the left in the anti-war movement, oh, no, that'll never happen. They just, they're nationalists. They're not doctrinaire communists. There was a horrible bloodbath. There were hundreds of thousands of people who were killed. If you count Cambodia, over a million people who were killed, who were murdered, including people who had devoted their lives and risked their lives to fighting alongside the United States. And two things happened that were shameful and very difficult. One was that in the midst of the South Vietnamese struggle to try to resist the invasion by the North Vietnamese, and this is in the spring of 1975, the Democrats voted as a block, and they controlled both houses of Congress. Gerald Ford was the president. But the Democrats controlled both houses of Congress, and they wouldn't even authorize medical supplies. They wouldn't help our allies who were fighting for their lives. And there ended up being, you may remember, the boat people. There were over 100,000 estimated deaths of people who died just trying to flee Vietnam ahead of this hideous invasion. Now, I don't think there will be anything like that here in Afghanistan. I pray it won't. But part of what Adam Smith was saying, I think, is tremendously important. And it was important in Iraq, too, when we largely got out of Iraq, is that for those people who had put their lives on the line to work with the United States, to serve with the United States, with our allies, people who are fighting for decent values. For instance, allowing women to go to school, which sounds almost like a joke, but that is a measure of a civilized country today. That those people who fought beside us do need some special consideration about finding potential shelter elsewhere, either in this country or any of the other many allied countries. Does Andrew Yang, who's going to be the next mayor of New York, does he now deserve shelter from the left-wing mob? Oh, you'll hear what he faced coming up on the Medved Show.
Tried other brands, but I came back to my sunshine.
For the best hot or cold pain relief, get the best. Get a Sunny Bay heating pad.
Sometimes life can be a pain in the neck or back or shoulder.
And the best relief for that pain is a Sunny Bay heating pad. Did you know that the American College of Physicians said that one of the best ways to treat muscle pain is heat therapy? Sunny Bay heating pads are handmade with high quality, can be used at home or at work, and have a lifetime 100% positive rating on both Amazon and Etsy.
Why take another pill?
Many people use our Sunny Bay heating pads alone and got rid of the neck pain.
Long distance travel or long hours in front of a computer can take its toll on your body.
Our homegrown small business tries to help people just like us. That's why we design and test our handmade products with great care before we introduce them to the public. You can easily find Sunny Bay heating pads on Amazon. Just go to Amazon.com and search for Sunny Bay heating pads.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
President Biden does not support House Judiciary Chairman Jerry Nadler's push to pack the U.S. Supreme Court. That's according to White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki. Someone else not a fan of adding four justices to the Supreme Court, Senate Minority Leader from Kentucky, Mitch McConnell.
The left wants a sword dangling over the justices when they weigh the facts in every case. As the Democrat leader threatened just 2 years ago, Democrats want the justices to know that they will, quote, pay the price, end quote, for rulings that Democrats don't like.
Former Vice President Mike Pence is recovering from surgery after getting a pacemaker. Pence's office announcing a pacemaker was implanted after he started experiencing a slow heart rate. The 61-year-old Pence expected to make a full recovery. The Dow gaining 305 points to close at 3435. USA Radio News.
Do you want to give you and your loved ones premium nutrition right now? Hi, I'm Jamil Bookaboo from TeamGaday.com and the GCN Longevity Health Team. Get your premium nutrition formulated by world-renowned naturopathic doctor, Dr. Joel Wallach at wholesale, or also become a distributor and earn income while supporting this broadcast. Go to TeamGaday.com via the shopping cart or contact form, and I'll get back to you with support personally. That's TeamGaday.com with Longevity. TeamGaday.com.
We've all seen and perhaps use the alcohol-based hand sanitizers. Have you noticed how it dries your skin, and as soon as the alcohol evaporates, it's no longer effective? GCNteam.com has alcohol-free antibacterial soap and foam meeting or exceeding all requirements set forth by the United States Food and Drug Administration. Come to GCNteam.com, keyword antibacterial, or call 877-878-4203.
Anytime, any place, anywhere. Radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
And on the Michael Medved show, a lot of people have been amazed that the two leading candidates for mayor of New York are both relative to the other people who are running for mayor, and there are about 20 of them. Really, there are a lot of Democratic candidates, and a lot of Democratic candidates who are winning a lot of funding, and then there are two Republican candidates, one of them a former talk show host, Curtis Sliwa of Guardian Angels, and the two Republican candidates are spending time just basically going after each other in an incredibly nasty and personal way. Well, it's New York. But the two leading candidates are Eric Adams, who's a borough president of Brooklyn, I believe. He's African-American, he's black, and he's a former cop. And he has taken a relatively moderate stand on police-related issues, which is very, very important in New York, because one thing, people do not want to go back to the pre-Giuliani days where New York was losing close to 1,000 people a year, sometimes more than that, to murder. And it was cut way, way down. Crime went down. The cops did a remarkable job cleaning up the city. Well, not so much under Bill de Blasio. And so the idea that you're going to derail Andrew Yang's campaign by heckling him, he was leading a bicycle protest, so-called, trying to get himself some publicity. He's running for mayor. And the former presidential candidate was riding along on his bicycle with other people to protest the shooting of Dante Wright and the events in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, when he met some hecklers and non-fans who sounded like this. Okay, is this an attack on an Asian male? Yes. And you may not have heard it, but one of the people shouted, "But we don't want you here, we don't want you here, you're pro-cop." Can I tell you something? If you're running for mayor of New York, being pro-cop is a good thing. It's not a bad thing. It's one of those things where in New York City, where people are so much up against each other, nobody can really afford not to be pro-cop, for goodness sake. And I just find it hilarious that you have people now on the left who think that the American people are going to vote for abolishing police departments, for defunding police departments, and who view police officers as the enemy. It's absurd. There was also, speaking of enemies, there was some very heated questioning in the Senate with one of Joe Biden's most controversial nominees. In fact, it is just about his most controversial nominee. She's been nominated to be the Deputy Attorney General at the Civil Rights Division, which is a very important division of the Justice Department. Her name is Kristen Clark, and we've talked about her nomination before. She has been involved supporting some of the theories of Louis Farrakhan in the past. She has taken some very extreme positions, including positions that I think most people would deem to be anti-Semitic. And Tom Cotton, who is not Jewish and doesn't come from a state, Arkansas, that has a deeply populous or significant Jewish community, was concerned about Kristen Clark and doing a line of questioning about some of the controversial police shootings that have occurred recently. It didn't go particularly well. Here is Senator Cotton. This is clip 10.
Ms. Clark, was Officer Darren Wilson justified when he shot and killed Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri in 2014?
So there is a trial underway right now, Senator, and I, like millions of people, am sitting back and watching the trial as it plays out, and am prepared to accept the verdict of the jury.
November of 2020, just a few months ago, that was not exactly what you said. You said that on this day, a grand jury chose not to indict Darren Wilson for the killing of Michael Brown. It's a powerful reminder of why we need to make clear that Black Lives Matter. We must demand that the Department of Justice resume pattern practice investigations and expand prosecutions involving police shootings. You sent a letter to Congress in which you described the Michael Brown case as, quote, prosecutorial decisions not to indict police because of impenetrable qualified immunity for police and acquittals based on racism, end quote.
Okay, there's a problem with her response. She says there's a trial going on. I'm going to wait for the decision of the jury. There is no trial. There were no charges that were brought against Officer Darren Wilson because after it was looked at by prosecutors in three different levels, including federal prosecutors, it was seen that he was basically in the midst of a struggle over his gun when he shot Michael Brown. And it's astonishing that this nominee for the Justice Department thought that there was a trial going on right now and she was waiting for a decision by the jury. There's no trial. There never has been. Dick Durbin, the senator from Illinois, second-ranking Democrat in the Senate, interrupted Senator Cotton, and the back and forth between them also didn't go particularly well. Listen.
Let's turn to another case, which is Jacob
Senator,
Blake.
Senator, could you please just allow her opportunity?
If you want to answer the simple question, yes or no. Let's turn to another case, which is Jacob
Senator,
Blake.
Senator, could you please just allow her opportunity to respond?
Could you please stop your pattern of interrupting me repeatedly? This happened the last time we had a hearing.
I'm sorry.
You called a vote in violation of this committee's rules.
I will give you additional time, but I'd like to give her a chance to complete her answer.
I've asked her a simple yes or no question multiple times. She refuses to answer it. Thank you, though, for your input.
Uh-huh. Senatorial courtesy at work. I know that Tom Cotton is apparently planning to run for president of the United States. He's a combat veteran with a sterling military record, brilliant Harvard Law School graduate and all that. I'm not sure he is going to be a dynamic presidential candidate in competition with the 9 to 12 other Republicans who have been mentioned as prospective standard bearers for the Republican Party. When we come back, there's a debate over booze. And what aspect of booze? Whether because of COVID-19 and restrictions for drinking in bars, whether it is somehow a demonstration of inequality and unfairness to ban booze or to enforce booze in public parks. And then the real problem with substance abuse, this, more than 87,000 Americans died of drug overdoses over the 12-month period that ended in September, according to preliminary federal data, eclipsing the toll from any year since the opioid epidemic began. Where is it worst? And for whom is it worst? We'll talk about that and more coming up on the MedVed Show.
More of Michael MedVed in a moment.
Very bad, and since I've taken Relief Factor, I've been able to walk normally again, and I was having a hard time walking, and the pain was very bad, and since I've taken Relief Factor, I've been able to walk normally again, and the pain has gone away. I really am walking pain-free, so I just want to recommend this to anyone who has severe pain or any type of pain. It is really a miracle product.
Try Relief Factor. It has worked wonderfully for literally hundreds of thousands and certainly for me. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for Relief Factor, and order your own quick start. Nothing to lose but your pain. The whole world to gain. MichaelMedved.com. Click on the banner for Relief Factor or call 833-654-PAIN. Relief Factor.
With new leadership in Washington, D.C., it's abundantly clear that Americans are deeply divided. What does our country even believe anymore? What do we have in common? One organization that continues to stand for what America has always believed is the Institute for Faith and Freedom at Grove City College. The Institute stands for the first things, the permanent things. Religious liberty, freedom of conscience, the family, limited government, free markets, our Judeo-Christian heritage. The Institute for Faith and Freedom is unafraid to support these timeless truths and principles with no apologies. Go to the website faithandfreedom.com and you'll see insightful, bold opinion pieces from the renowned faculty at Grove City College. See Mark Hendrickson's latest on GameStop, Wall Street, and the hedge fund managers. See John Sparks and former Deputy Attorney General Paul McNulty on impeachment. And take a look at our friend Paul Kanger's articles and speeches. You can find all of this and much more at the website of the Institute for Faith and Freedom. That's www.faithandfreedom.com.
Hey, everybody.
If you've ever thought about heirloom beans as a storable survival food, I've got great news. In fact, I'll bet it's the best news you've heard in a while. Here's the thing. We've just received a fresh batch of gourmet heirloom beans, survival soup beans. These beans are gorgeous, highly nutritious, and above all, with no hesitation whatsoever, the best tasting beans in the entire world. The best part? We've dropped the price by 33% this week for listeners who know higher food prices are coming and want an inflation hedge you can actually eat if you want to. Gets even better. With your permission and with the high regard for your health and well-being, I also want to send you 2 pounds of what we think is the single most underrated superfood in the world, period. Go to soupbeansurvival.com, that's soupbeansurvival.com, and discover the real reason we're giving this unusual superfood away at soupbeansurvival.com, that's soupbeansurvival.com.
Now with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano colloidal silver from AmeriCare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. AmeriCare's nano colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, AmeriCare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nano colloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
Michael Medved Show. Remember, we covered the recent analysis by U.S. News and World Report that rated the United States as the sixth best country in the world. Japan was number two. Number one was Canada. And in Canada right now, they're undergoing a debate. Honest to gosh, I don't fully understand it. I've always taken it as kind of a given that it makes sense when you have public parks and there are a lot of kids there and playgrounds and families. It seems to me reasonable that alcohol consumption should be banned in public parks. I mean, first of all, there are a lot of pub and bar owners, restaurant owners, I think would prefer they be banned in public parks. But in Toronto, whereas in most of the civilized world, there have been closures and limitations on going to bars and drinking there, there's now a move by a Torontonian city councillor, a councilman, in other words, from Ward 12, whose name is Josh Matlow, who says that it's unequal to people who are downtrodden and poor not to allow them to drink and get fresh air at the same time. If Matlow's new motion is successful, Torontonians may soon be able to drink in parks. This would be really good news, I'm sure, for the homeless encampments in the parks, a practice long enjoyed throughout Europe and Australia and Asia. Okay. Some, however, worry this isn't the time to relax the laws, fearing that social distancing rules and judgment-altering drugs won't make a good cocktail. Mayor John Tory said he's been positively disposed to a review of the outdoor drinking ban for years, but he isn't sure now is the time to discuss it. So, in any event, he wants to punt. He says, I think it's something that's time will come, he said, but at the moment my exclusive focus is on the pandemic and trying to put it behind us so we can get back to being in parks, let alone what we do when we get there. Okay, so you have to wait for this ban. One of the statements here, one of the arguments, was that drinking in parks has no adverse effect on anyone else other than the drinker. Well, that's assuming that the drinking in parks doesn't become a drunken brawl. And I think that's one of the ideas of some of the restrictions. It's just one of the things that most people have learned to live with here in the United States, I think. In any event, one thing that we haven't learned to live with, headline 87,000 overdose deaths in a year, a U.S. crisis on top of the pandemic. The surge represents an increasingly urgent public health crisis, one that has drawn less attention and fewer resources while the nation has battled the coronavirus pandemic. The preliminary data released yesterday by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention show a 29% rise in overdose deaths from October 2019 through September 2020. The most recent data available compared with the previous 12-month period. Illicitly manufactured fentanyl and other synthetic opioids were the primary drivers, although many fatal overdoses have also involved stimulant drugs, particularly methamphetamines. And unlike in the early years of the opioid epidemic, when deaths were largely among white Americans in rural and suburban areas, the current crisis affects black Americans disproportionately. The highest increase in mortality from opioids, predominantly driven by fentanyl, is now among young black Americans. So said Dr. Nora Volkow, who's the director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse. And when you look at mortality from methamphetamines, it's chilling to realize the risk of dying from methamphetamine overdose is 12 times higher among American Indians and Alaskan Natives than other groups. Now, that's partially because in reservations and near reservations, they have meth labs, which should be cracked down upon, of course, and are, whenever possible. Dr. Volko added that more deaths than ever involved drug combinations, typically of fentanyl or heroin with stimulants. The surging death rate eclipses modest gains made during the President Trump's administration against the nation's entrenched addiction epidemic. During his administration, several billion dollars in grants to states allowed more drug users to get access to the three FDA-approved medications for opioid addiction: methadone, buprenorphine, and naltrexone that work by suppressing cravings and symptoms of withdrawal. Okay, all of this is alarming, and it's one of those things where they blame the pandemic, which has closed some drug treatment centers, and they say northeastern states that had been hardest hit by opioid deaths in recent years saw some of the smallest increases this time in deaths in the first half of the pandemic year, with the exception of Maine. The hardest hit states included West Virginia and Kentucky, which have long ranked at the top in overdose deaths, but also a huge surge in western states like California and Arizona. This is a true national crisis, and when President Biden is talking about infrastructure and change that needs to be made, it should also include some attention to 87,000 people dying of overdoses. That's more than suicides, murders, and I believe traffic accidents combined. Speaking of traffic accidents, well, there's a new movie. And the movie is a true story, and it's a true story about somebody who became a fixture in the civil rights movement, even though, civil rights movement, even though his grandfather was a KKK member. Listen.
Now it's time for Medved's Entertainment Minute.
The grandson of an Alabama Klansman risks his life to support the civil rights movement of the late 1950s in the mostly true story, Son of the South, now playing in select theaters.
You would jeopardize your whole life for some grand principle?
Isn't that what they're doing?
So what's going to happen next? Continue on.
Based on the memoir of Bob Zellner, the main character in this story, the movie is an issues-driven melodrama with cameo performances by the late Brian Dennehy, Julia Ormond, Cedric the Entertainer, and a smattering of other memorable names. It emphasizes the violence and brutality of racist extremism that earns a PG-13 rating, but with a distracting tendency to name-check celebrities who will mean little to all those who aren't already students of the era. 2 stars for the intense, well-intentioned, but disappointing Son of the South.
This feature brought to you by the Thank Heaven Foundation.
Part of the problem with Son of the South is the characters never come across like fully real people. They come across like talking advocates for justice and decency. But, again, for people who do want to see the recreations of some of the true horrors, which are not exaggerated, of the resistance to the civil rights progress, the film has its moments. Tomorrow on the Medved Show, we're going to be speaking to a one-time presidential speechwriter for President Bush, who says that Joe Biden is now making the Trump presidency look like a golden age of unity. Mark Thiessen believes that? We'll talk to him. We'll also talk to Ruben Navarrete, whose dad was a cop, who has some perspective, I think, on the recent attacks on police service and the crisis at the border. Also, Hollywood celebrities got together to create an ad, sometimes obscene, in favor of massive reparations for slavery. And we'll also be covering movies, including Melissa McCarthy's latest comedy, Thunder Force, and a truly amazing and wonderful film about the passion for brewing beer. That and much more coming up in this greatest nation on God's green earth.
If Ernest Hemingway was alive today, would he say this to you?
Shakespeare, Mark Twain, Edgar Allan Poe, all great writers. And after reading your book, I simply must add you to the list.
Wait, you don't have a book yet. So make a free call to Page Publishing. Their expert staff can help you turn your book idea into a real book, a masterpiece that could someday make the bestseller list in hard copy and digitally all across the world. Page Publishing can help you completely take your idea for a book, write it, and publish it. So if you want to join the ranks of some of the most famous authors in the world, call now for a free information kit. Turn your book idea into publishing gold. Make a free call right now to Page Publishing.
800-378-3212. 800-378-3212. 800-378-3212. That's 800-378-3212.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
No other network provides the level of customer service we do. When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com and an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.